This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
So on my way to one of the polling stations, it was raining. I had to have my umbrella. And when I got there, actually, the polling station, the first one that I visited, was, was kind of crowded. People were already in line and waiting to vote. So basically, I think everything opened on time, which actually was very impressive.
That was our reporter, Mariama Diallo, in Maputo, covering Election Day today in Mozambique. Details coming up. Also, Burkina Faso's military junta has suspended Voice of America's broadcasts for 3 months. And the human rights situation in the Democratic Republic of Congo is in a downward spiral. All these and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Voters in Mozambique went to the polls today to elect a new president. Daniel Francisco Chapo, the candidate for the governing party Frelimo, faces 3 other contenders. The Islamic State-backed insurgency that is deepening grave humanitarian and economic problems for the country is a major election issue. Our reporter Mariama Diallo in Maputo talked to me a little while ago about what she observed on Election Day in Mozambique.
I would say that voters actually braved morning rain in Maputo to line up as early as 7 a.m. to cast their ballots. So on my way to one of the polling stations, it was raining. I had to have my umbrella. And when I got there, actually, the polling station, the first one that I visited, was, was kind of crowded. People were already in line and waiting to vote. So basically, I think everything opened on time, which actually was very impressive because I have covered other elections. But I got to tell you, in Mozambique, the polling station that I visited, which is the Josina Machel Secondary High School, the first one. Basically, we had the outgoing president, Filipe Nyusi, was slated to vote there around 7, and he arrived literally very close to that time. And at 7:30, we had 2 other opposition candidates who actually voted there as well. So everything seemed to be in place. It's cast their ballots without really any incident.
Mariama, 4 candidates are vying to be president. Mm-hmm. What are the main issues they are running on? Because the insurgency and the economic conditions probably are the main issues, and they are in some ways intertwined.
Absolutely. I think when you talk about the ruling party leader, Daniel Chapo, who is basically the ruling Frelimo party leader, he had talked about, speaking of that insurgency, that if he gets elected, securing the Cabo Delgado area, which is the northern part of Mozambique, northeastern part of Mozambique, will be one of his top priority. We know that that area, is intertwined a little bit, affects what happens in the economy because you have that area is the oil and gas rich area. You have companies who have tried to invest in there, but those companies have not been able to operate because the area is not secure. So the Frelimo leader, Daniel Chapo, talked about that and said that that will be certainly his top priority because he says security is important because without it, there's no development. So you have the other leaders, though. Osufo Mamad is the candidate of the one main opposition party, who the Renamo, that came in second in the last presidential election. But they accused the government, the Frelimo government, of having 49 years, it's almost 50 years of independence, of ruling the country. And they accused them of having really not done much for the ordinary Mozambican, and they're saying that they had 50 years to do it and they haven't done it. So you hear those kinds of exchanges. You also have Lutero Simango, the leader of the Mozambique Democratic Movement, and the fairly newcomer Venancio Mondlane, who is not fairly new because he used to be part of the Renamo party, but he's an independent who had broke away from that party. and seems to be kind of popular among the youth, you know. But yeah, so you have it. So the issues with the youth, I think, with the people that I've spoken to, has a lot to do with jobs. You know, some of them talk about a high cost of living. So, you know, some of them talk about corruption.
You are so right, Mariama. Young people born in the decade since Mozambique secured its independence have fiercely, you know, challenged political leaders who they believe have not delivered on promises of a better life. So when will we find out the results?
It's possible that we'll have some preliminary results, Ben, and we'll get those to you guys when we get them.
That was our reporter in Maputo, Mariama Diallo. The country's electoral commission says it will officially announce the results of the election within 15 days. U.S. and African leaders recently joined a Voice of America town hall discussion with the focus on the race for the White House between Democratic Vice President Kamala Harris and Republican former President Donald Trump, and how the outcome could impact U.S.-Africa relations. VOA's Mike Hovey has more.
Now, we are talking about the diaspora.
Experts on U.S.-Africa relations urged members of the African diaspora to be involved in the United States elections this year during VOA's African Voices U.S. Elections Town Hall. Ambassador J.P. DeFan, the first U.S. Special Envoy for the Sahel region of Africa, says members of the diaspora should educate themselves on U.S. policy and use the elections as an opportunity to inform candidates about their concerns.
How does the African diaspora engage? The same way every citizen should engage. Informing themselves about the issues that matter to their communities and their families.
Two other experts, Kweku Nwama, a Ghanaian-American professor at American University in Washington, D.C., and Philomena Desmond Ogugba, an international development professional who promotes U.S.-Africa trade and investment, joined FAM for the town hall. VOA's Yeas Wuhib led the discussion, and a dozen of members of the African diaspora in the United States, including African Americans, joined the audience in VOA's Washington studio. Desmond Ogugba says Africans in the diaspora should vote for a candidate who is educated on issues that affect them.
We have to vote on issues that affect the African diaspora. The issues that affect you is not the same that affects me. Immigration is important to me. Education is important to me. Health is important to me. Work is important to me, especially immigration.
When asked about the importance of the elections to the African diaspora, Professor Nwama expressed confidence that whichever candidate takes over from departing President Joe Biden, Africa and America will continue to strengthen their relationship.
Africa is a big part of America's future. America needs Africa. Africa needs America, too. And then there's speculation about what happens with the candidates that we have running. And I think that no matter who wins this election, Africa will continue to be an important part of America's foreign policy. And Africa will continue to have friends on both sides of the aisle, whether it's a Republican president or a Democratic president.
The panelists also fielded questions from members of the audience, including how Black people in America, including African Americans, Africans, and those from the Caribbean, can work together to contribute to the continent's economic growth. Be sure to watch the full town hall, which will air Wednesday on VOA's Straight Talk Africa program at 18:30 UTC to 19:30 UTC, or catch it on voaafrica.com. Mike Ove, VOA News, Washington.
More than 2.4 million African immigrants are living in the United States, and this diverse community is becoming a voice in American elections, asserting both economic and political power. In part two of my conversation with Chukwuneso Vincent Iwonege, chair of Maryland Governor's Commission on African Affairs, as well as chair of the African Diaspora Advisory Board for Prince George's County, I asked how Africans in the diaspora can strengthen relations with the African-American community in the U.S.
That's a very pivotal question, and also is profound in the fact that, you know, again, one of the things that we've pushed is also unity amongst, you know, the Black nations that are here. And a lot of times the sentiment has been that the African immigrant does not understand the struggles that the African-American have gone through to be able to get the environment or the situation that we have or we stepped into. And part of the things that we've talked to our people about is to understand, because I think one of the things that plague us is understanding. Most of the time, the African immigrant comes and says, wow, you guys don't know what you have. So, but that is changing, because part of what we've, you know, we're trying to do here in the county is have what we call an African cultural and multicultural center. And what that will do is, you know, where both people will come together to learn from each other. The African immigrant has been very successful in the areas of education and healthcare with, and, you know, that's, you know, something that the African Americans can learn from. And also we Africans can learn from the struggles of the African American, and also to how they have thrived in business through their struggles. So one of the things we're doing is immigration and helping both parties understand that together we'll thrive, but again, working separately will only help, you know, will only hold us back. And I think the advancements of also Afrobeat, which is our music, and also our culinary, which is food. I think that integration is coming, where a lot of people have started accepting that, okay, you know, it's good to know where you're from. So a lot of course African Americans have started doing their genealogy to find actually what part of the continent that, you know, they can align with. So that integration is coming, and is, you know, is a work that we'll continue to do both here and hopefully nationally with, you know, some of our allies and our nonprofits. But it's moving forward now, because we could see it with some of the, like I said, the elections that have happened in the past. You know, people with foreign names were not able to win elections, but the integration is happening here in Maryland, and we'll see it nationwide. Maybe we'll be that anchor for the nation to copy from.
Especially, you just mentioned the food and the music. That's one of the ways to actually, you know, get to acclimate ourselves with American society, and especially the African-American society. A lot of Ethiopian restaurants actually becoming cultural ambassadors for their country.
You go to Silver Spring, it's literally Ethiopia. And that's part of what I'm saying is that, you know, through our work and also add value, places like Silver Spring, you know, part of Silver Spring can be named Little Ethiopia. Parts of Baltimore County, where you have a lot of Kenyans and Nigerians, can be named Little Lagos, exactly, or even Lana here. So, but again, those kind of, you know, things, and also, as you could see from what Governor Moore did, and also County Executive also Brooks, is forward thinking, because, you know, stepping out of the shadows and proclaiming September as African Heritage Month, not that you don't do your work all year round, does is that you amplify it in September, where, you know, you have these several events where the other cultures get to see you.
That was Chukwuneso Vincent Iwanagay, Chair of Maryland Governor's Commission on African Affairs, speaking with me from Silver Spring, Maryland. You're listening to African News Tonight on the Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. And of course, we'd love to hear from you. You can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by WhatsApp. The number is +1-202-258-3076. Every Wednesdays, we'll be sharing our listeners' comments on African News Tonight. Burkina Faso's military junta has suspended Voice of America's broadcasts for 3 months over coverage of militant violence in the country and in neighboring Mali. Burkina Faso's state news agency said late Monday that the country's media regulator criticized VOA's broadcasts about recent attacks as intended to undermine the morale of the armed forces in the two countries. The communique also said a VOA journalist made comments that condoned terrorism and that suspending VOA was necessary to prevent the propagation of malicious insinuations about insecurity in the region. VOA spokesperson Niggy Gibbs said VOA has shut down its FM transmitter in Burkina Faso's capital Ouagadougou as a result of the suspension. He said, while VOA respects the Burkina Faso regulatory framework, we do not agree with what we believe are incorrect assertions made by Burkina Faso's Superior Council for Communication. Gibbs denied that statements made in VOA's broadcast condoned or justified terrorism, or that the reporting intended to demoralize the people and security of the Sahel States Alliance. Rights experts warn the human rights situation in the Democratic Republic of Congo is in a downward spiral as violations and abuse, violence and conflict continue to escalate. United Nations and Congolese experts participated in an enhanced dialogue on the human rights situation in the DRC at the UN Human Rights Council. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Kicking off the discussion, UN Human Rights Chief Volker Turk urged the international community to pay more attention to the plight of millions of Congolese devastated by decades of conflict. He said the number of victims of human rights violations continues to grow, mainly in the eastern conflict-affected provinces. Armed groups, he said, allegedly are responsible for 61% of these violations, as well as for deadly attacks against civilians and civilian infrastructure. He said sexual violence is spreading. Despite efforts to prevent and investigate cases, he said more than 700 victims of appalling sexual abuse have been identified between June 2023 and May of this year. Here he is speaking through an interpreter.
The armed groups take people prisoner and subject women and girls to sexual slavery. Many of them have been killed after being raped. These cases are, of course, not all being reported. This is atrocious. Human rights violations committed by the Congolese Defense and Security Forces during their military operations against armed groups also remain of concern.
The High Commissioner said any role played by Rwanda in supporting the M23 in North Kivu and by any other country in supporting armed groups in the DRC must stop. The DRC's Minister of Human Rights, Chantal Shambu-Mwavita, said her government has made great progress in protecting human rights. This, in spite of the challenges posed by the deadly war in the east of the country. Alluding to Rwanda, she pointed her finger at so-called negative forces supporting the armed groups from the outside. She said the president of the UN General Assembly acknowledged the DRC's commitment to implement the Rwanda peace process. Here is Mwavita speaking through an interpreter.
While specifying that the resurgence of the M23 terrorist group supported by Rwanda has caused an unprecedented humanitarian crisis, with nearly 7 million IDPs, he called on the international community to condemn these actions strongly and to impose targeted sanctions on Rwanda for its destabilizing role.
Mwavita said the war in the eastern provinces is closely linked to the seizure and illegal exploitation of her country's natural resources by Rwanda and other countries. She demanded the immediate and unconditional withdrawal of Rwandan troops from her country's territory. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
UNICEF says nearly 700 children have been injured in Lebanon since the Israeli strikes began a couple of weeks ago and that mass displacement continues. The UN Children's Agency is calling on all sides in the Middle East conflict to stop the airstrikes and consider the innocent children whose lives are at stake. UNICEF spokesperson Tess Ingram is in Beirut and describes conditions there to VOA's Carol Van Dam.
The conditions here in Lebanon are really tough for families. The airstrikes continue. Every night you hear some volume, some scale of explosions. But of course, it's not limited to the capital city. It is happening right across the country, including and especially in the south of Lebanon. The airstrikes have damaged people's homes and forced many people on the move. That according to the government of Lebanon, over 1 million people are now displaced across Lebanon, and we estimate that at least 300,000 of those are children.
Where are they going?
People are being forced to flee their communities. Most of the people I met have left either South Lebanon or the southern suburbs of Beirut, and they're traveling north, either from southern Lebanon up to Beirut or further north into the mountains in the north of the country. And the response is having to scale up rapidly to find places for these people to go. And so many public schools are being turned into shelters. There are now over 900 shelters across Lebanon, a dramatic increase from just a few days ago when that number was closer to 200. And over 600 of those 900 shelters are at capacity. So that just gives you a sense of how quickly they're filling up with people. I met people who told me that they left with only the clothes on their back. And one mum said to me, the lucky people are the ones that have a change of clothes.
You talk about these shelters that have been set up all over Beirut and all over the place. Are they safe from airstrikes?
They should be protected under international law, that because they're civilian objects, schools, and that they're housing civilians, that these should be safe places for people. But as we've seen in other conflicts around the world, this isn't always respected. So we are urging the parties to the conflict to protect civilians, including the places where they're sheltering.
Are you worried? Are you scared being there in Beirut?
I am confident in the systems that look after us with the United Nations here in Lebanon. I think that I would be frightened if I was a child, and I met many children this week who are terrified.
Can you talk to me about some of those children that you met?
I met a girl called Ghazal, who's 9, and she told me that she and her family were leaving the south of Lebanon to come to Beirut, and they were driving up the highway, and an airstrike hit a car right next to them on the highway. And not only damaging that car, but also the car that Ghazal was in. Glass went everywhere from the windows. And it was so damaged that the family couldn't drive the car. They didn't have money to get a taxi, and so they had to walk the rest of the way. But then as we were talking and playing in this shelter, we had a balloon, and the balloon popped. And I was shocked at the reaction that Ghazal had. She jumped in the air. And she said she thought it reminded her of the car being hit on the highway next to her. And other children around jumped too. So it's one example of how children are being traumatized by these airstrikes. And so many children yesterday told me about that.
What is UNICEF doing in Beirut right now to try to help children and other people?
Firstly, supplies. People are leaving with only really the clothes on their back. So we're going to shelters to help turn the schools into places that people can live. So we're bringing mattresses and blankets and water and kitchen supplies. We're also providing medical supplies to hospitals.
That was UNICEF spokesperson Tess Ingram speaking to VOA's Carol Van Dam from the Lebanese capital, Beirut. The United States has sanctioned a senior leader of Sudan's paramilitary rapid support forces for supplying weapons for the 17-month-long war, which has killed more than 20,000 people. The U.S. Department of Treasury says Algoni Hamdan Dagalo Musa controls a front company based in the United Arab Emirates that imported vehicles to Sudan on behalf of the RSF and fitted them with machine guns. He is the brother of RSF commander Mohammed Hamdan Dagalo. Last year, the U.S. imposed visa sanctions on officials from the Sudanese army and the RSF. The White House, at the time, also said it will impose sanctions against key defense companies who the U.S. said perpetuate violence in Sudan. War between the Sudanese military and the RSF broke out in April 2023 in the capital Khartoum and has spread across the country. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiya Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Al Santos, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.